Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So welcome to the people who have just come for this weekend. And on the Wednesday nights, the talks are aimed directly at the monks, the novices, anagarikas, those people who are going to be staying the whole 3 months of this retreat. So these are specific at this time of the rains retreat to meditation. So you may find it not so interesting, or maybe a little bit hard to understand, but please bear with it, because this is, you know, the talk for those who are really striving to let go on the path of meditation. And last week I did mention about the hindrances to meditation, and this week I wanted to focus on another aspect which will help the mind become peaceful and still and free, and that is just to focusing on the other side of the mind. The hindrances are just looking at the faults of the mind, the problems which happen in meditation. And there is something very difficult about, or problematical about, just noticing the faults, the hindrances. It just turns the mind into being a little bit fault-finding, looking for what's wrong, noticing these restlessness, sleepiness, or whatever else, and noticing that and putting a label on it as something bad to be got rid of. And sometimes even just calling them defilements, hindrances, or whatever, even that can be psychologically damaging to the path of meditation. So today I was going to just look at that mind from the other angle, the perception of the beautiful, the perception of the positive, the perception of joy, the perception of contentment and satisfaction with whatever you're experiencing. Because by changing the perceptions around, you will find that the meditation will begin to change. Okay, you have a state of mind. It could be you're falling asleep, or the mind is very restless and thinking about so many things. And just how do you react to that? Even just by calling it a hindrance, and by getting that negativity towards that feeling or towards that experience of restlessness, you will find that the restlessness continues. But by having a positive perception and not even looking at it as a hindrance, looking at it as just a phenomena which arises and passes away. And at least, you know, I may be sort of thinking, but at least I'm thinking of the Dhamma. And if you're not thinking of the Dhamma, well, at least, you know, I'm not thinking of disrobing. If you're thinking of disrobing, at least I'm not thinking of disrobing today. Mm-hmm. Maybe tomorrow. Whatever it is, just give a slightly positive slant to whatever you are doing. And you'll find, because you're developing that positive slant to whatever you are doing, there's a sense of the mind engaging in the moment. And the very cause for restlessness, which I mentioned last week, which was discontent, not happy to be here, vanishes. You're undermining the defilements by understanding the psychology of the mind. And it brings me back just to a little anecdote, and maybe this, bringing these anecdotes, especially for those who want to just understand roughly where I'm coming from, who may not be familiar with my teachings. And that was that anecdote from when I was invited to give a keynote at the Institute of Mental Health in Singapore. And that was a couple of years ago during the rains retreat. And I asked for the 7-day allowance to go to that keynote address, and it was a very helpful, because teaching the way I do, I was taken aside by one of the heads of departments, and he wanted me to bless, you know, his facility. And he added he wasn't a Buddhist, but he was inspired by what I was saying. And when I went to his ward, it was a schizophrenia ward at the Institute of Mental Health in Singapore, in the north of the island. There I asked him how he treats schizophrenia. And that's when he said to me, just like you said in your keynote address, I don't treat schizophrenia. And that was wonderful, coming from the professor of the schizophrenia ward. And he was saying, I treat the other part of the patient. And I smiled and rejoiced, because I realized that that fellow was doing exactly the same as I was doing in my meditation. Not to actually to treat the hindrances, but to treat the other part of the mind. Because it's basically what you understand, having meditated for such a long time, that even if you focus on your faults and your defects in meditation or in monastic life or whatever else, if you start to think, I'm really sleepy, I'm really lazy, I'm really restless, you find the sleepiness, the laziness and the restlessness increases. Whatever you focus on grows. If you water the weeds grow. If you just ignore those weeds and just water the flowers grow. So by focusing on the other part of the mind, the peaceful part of the mind, you find many of those hindrances and defilements pass away. You'll find the meditation does start to work by not focusing on the times it doesn't work, but on the times it does work. It's a very subtle point, and you may sort of dismiss it too easily, but it is actually very powerful. What it is doing is actually learning how to develop, you know, the positive mind state, learning how to develop, you know, the piti sukha, the joy, the inspiration in what you're doing. Because sometimes that in a meditation retreat it's so easy to get into negativity. I have to work so hard. Why do I have to work in the kitchen or work on the pumps? Why do I have to get so tired? Why when I'm having my retreat do I have to get a bad back? Why can't I get a bad back on other times instead of when I've put my all the attention on the retreat period? Why is it that, yes, you know, I almost get into deep meditation, but it always fails at the last. I get the nimitta, but just can't get any further. You can see just at every point in meditation, it's just so easy to get that little negativity. And the last example was really important. Even though you get a beautiful nimitta, but I can't get into jhana. Come on, you got a nimitta. Isn't that good enough? Many people here would just be so jealous of you. You got a nimitta, what are you complaining about? So just be very fact you've got a beautiful nimitta, we rejoice in that. This is good enough for me. Oh, what a wonderful thing that is. So instead of looking at what's missing, you look for what you have. It's called the perception of gratitude. Instead of looking for what's wrong, we look for what's right. You know, sometimes, you know, if I ever get sick, I don't get sick that often. Sometimes if I get sick, I know sometimes you just, you know, you can't sort of sit cross-legged, you know, because, you know, you just, your body's just too weak. Or, you know, maybe, you know, you've got hay fever, which I sometimes get, or a cold. And if you get any of those illnesses, it's so easy to get negative. But, you know, the perception which I try and do is, well, look, I've got a achy body, it's sick, it's weak, but at least I'm a monk and I'm in a monastery. Isn't it wonderful, just if I'm going to be sick anywhere, just to be sick in a monastery. If I'm going to die, just to die in these robes. If I'm going to have any pain, just having a pain, just having lived such a, you know, a life as a Buddhist monk is wonderful. You know, you always look for that positive aspect in whatever you're experiencing. And even if you are that sick, you think, what a wonderful opportunity this is to understand the real nature of my body. It's totally out of control. And now when I really need it to be healthy, when I'm on retreat, this is what it does. It gets sick on me. When I'm just, well, this actually happens quite often, when I'm, especially hay fever season. When you start to get nimittas, I start to sneeze. I don't know what that is. Just the nose decides it wants to get irritated and sneeze just at the last moment. I really think it's that fellow Mara who realizes, I know that in the suttas that Mara got up Moggallana's backside, he got into his guts. But I think Mara, he gets into my nose when I start to get some deep meditation and makes me sneeze. But really it's probably just the pollen, but maybe just Mara blows a bit extra in there to stop me getting into the deep meditation. But whatever it is, sometimes that can be quite disturbing for you if you haven't got the right attitude of mind. And what happens? You get disturbed, you just make more of suffering out of it, instead of just realizing this is just the nature of my body, this is the nature of my mind. So you really learn to use this. This is your insight practice, this is your understanding using wisdom. So you never allow any negativity to come up in the mind. It's not a hindrance anymore, it's just something I learn from. It's just growing pains. Whatever it is, you always give it that positive slant. And if you're sleepy, just, oh, my body must need to sleep. So you just allow that positive attitude to sink into the mind. Now that positive attitude, sometimes people say that's going to engender laziness. But actually that's just a fear of the Western way of looking at things. Usually that kindness and that gentleness, that acceptance, that actually gives rise to a state of peace and stillness, and the mind starts to focus. Whenever you just let go into negativity rather than let go into positivity, you will find you will get those hindrances. And they'll get worse and worse and worse, and you get frustrated. So instead we develop the perception of the beautiful. Isn't it beautiful I'm sick? Isn't it beautiful I'm cold? Isn't it beautiful that I'm restless? Now that may seem to be just counterproductive, but I was saying a few moments ago, you try it and convince yourself and market that sense of the beautiful, and you find because you find whatever you're experiencing you can make peace with, you can be kind with, you can be gentle with, because it's beautiful, you'll find that your mind stops being restless. You stop wasting energy fighting the world. Just as that sutta we chanted a few moments ago, the fire sermon. That fire sermon was looking at the body and mind in terms of the six senses. You know, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and knowing with the mind. And just to say each one of these are on fire. And just the sense base, the objects, the experience, the sensations, the Vedana. Just these are all just on fire. And just knowing just how much they're burning and hurting is enough to give you nibbida towards them. Nibbida towards them, look, I can't do anything with these. Just let them go, just disengage. Now, whatever you have with your body, with your mind, it's nothing to do with you, and it just goes according to its nature. So just leave it all alone, let it go. So disengage. It's not just disengage from what's out there, disengage from what's inside as well, the knower and the doer. And that sense of like disengaging from things, it's not really worth fighting. So just let it be, leave it alone. The perception that it's beautiful, because especially this time of the year, fires are beautiful. You know, when many of you go back, you'll turn on your gas heaters or electric heaters if you've got one. So you delight in the beautiful fire and the warmth of this moment. Which is what I'm saying, is you just delight in this moment, no matter what it is. And because you're not fighting this moment, because you're not rejecting it, because you are making peace with it, you'll find contentment comes. How on earth can you get contentment and stillness when you're fighting? And that's the problem with our meditation, with our mind. We're so much fighters rather than acceptors. Always seeing just the faults and having to fix them rather than seeing the beauty and being able to rest with things. And not only is that, you know, with your life, that is with one's meditation. Sometimes when I meditate, sometimes it doesn't work, on the surface. So sometimes you're sitting there and you're getting tired, the mind's not engaging. And you think, what's going on? And I'm always doing something, always fighting. I say, well, this is good enough for me, this is enough. I let this be, I don't fight it. And I just respect it. Now, in order to make peace with this moment, you have to respect it. If you just make peace with it, just grudgingly, you know, I don't really respect you, mind, you know, you're sloppy, you're lazy, you think too much, you're just too tired. If you don't respect the mind, you can't really make peace with it. But that fire sermon, this is its nature to do things like this, it's on fire. And it's not just on fire with greed, hatred and delusion, it's on fire with restlessness, it's on fire with laziness, it's on fire with all sorts of defilements. But that's its nature, it's no problem. So make peace with these things. Be kind to them, be gentle. And you'll find when you don't fight, you can actually see the rationale behind this. You're opening the door of your heart to the fire in the senses. And the heart is opening up to itself as well. You're making peace with it, you're being kind, you're being gentle. And just doing that much, making peace with whatever you're experiencing, means when I'm sick, I can always meditate. Now, when I'm tired, I can always meditate. No matter what's happening, I can always meditate. So there's no moment when I can't meditate, because there's no moment when I can't just make peace with things. And the reason I can make peace with it, because I respect this moment, no matter what it is. So some of you have listened to me sort of give many Dharma talks, know many of the similes, and just the way that I've tried to bring other angles to Buddhist teachings. And one of the most helpful for me and for others aspects is just looking upon, you know, meditation karma. You know, just like the law of karma, the law of cause and effect, if you do something beautiful and good, you're going to get wonderful results. If you do something stupid with ill will or with greed and selfishness, it's going to sort of, you know, come back upon you with bad karma. I always apply that to my meditation as well. So here I am with my city mind, you know, tired, restless, whatever it is. So what karma am I making right now? And why am I tired? Why am I sleepy? I've got these things arising in my mind. And by using the framework of, you know, karma and vipaka, now you realize that what I'm experiencing right now, whether it's, you know, lustful thoughts or sleepy thoughts or dull thoughts or inspired thoughts, whatever I'm experiencing right now is actually, it's got its causes. It's because of the past. And some of those are just experiences from when I was young, you know, from before I even became a monk. Well, look, you know, my brother's coming in a couple of days. So it's going to bring back all of those old thoughts of, you know, before I was a monk. Just an old karma is going to come back and hit me next week. I hope he doesn't talk too much about the stupid things I did when I was a young monk. He's going to probably embarrass me a lot. Never mind. I don't mind. It's not me. It's just this guy a long time ago from whom I evolved. You know, just like sort of human beings are supposed to evolve from the apes, and from the apes from the primeval sludge. You know, the primeval sludge was me when I was 6 or 7 years of old. So I have evolved since then, I hope. So anyway, sort of back to just making peace with things. So when you just look at what you're experiencing right now, whatever it is, whether it's dullness, whether it's restlessness, boredom, frustration, bliss, whatever you're experiencing right now, to look upon it as, this is vipaka. It's a result of old karma. And, you know, some of that old karma is years ago, so you have to deal with this. Now the point is that what you're experiencing now, you're stuck with. You can't do anything, you know, to get rid of it. Because trying to get rid of it is making bad meditation karma right now. And if you try and get rid of your sloth and torpor, sleepiness or whatever, you're trying to get rid of it, you are making bad meditation karma. It's going to come and hit you later on. So I learned a long time ago, whatever I experience, this is what I'm experiencing right now. My job is to make sure I don't make bad karma with what I have to experience. Instead, to make good meditation karma with what I'm experiencing. So if I'm tired, that's got its causes. Been working too hard, talking too much, having to do too many bits and pieces. You know, and I'm not in control of my life. So if I'm tired, I know why. I don't think upon it as a personal failure. You know, you should not be tired. I should have psychic powers to create energy like Superman whenever I want. A human being with these effects of the causes. so you feel tiredness, so you don't feel guilty about it or feel it like it's a personal failing. Instead, I know that all I can do, that my responsibility and job, is to make good karma with what I've got. So I look upon this feeling of tiredness or whatever it is. Tiredness is just an example. I look upon this and say, right, I can always do something positive with this. It's not a fault. It's only a fault if I treat it wrongly. It's a fault if I make bad karma right now. So what I'm dealing with, I just accept. And the beauty, the perception of the beauty, is perceiving the beautiful attitude which I have to whatever I have to experience. So the beauty doesn't lie in the object. The beauty lies in the way I look at it. So I look at this, my making peace, being kind, being gentle, respecting this moment. Not trying to get rid of it, not indulging in it, but having this beautiful aspect of just leaving it alone, respecting it, opening the door of my heart to this moment, to this tiredness, having unconditional awareness. In other words, being aware, not judging, not trying to get rid of, not trying to hold on to. This awareness which respects, allows things to be, and creates this beautiful state of peace with whatever I have to experience. I did mention this to someone in interviews a few days ago or something, maybe only yesterday. But it's something which I learned a long, long time ago, again meditating. Sometimes that you would get to a stage of meditation and to make peace with what you're experiencing, I'd say to myself, just calm, calm, calm. And it's very similar to sometimes people actually look at you and they say, come on, relax. Or you tell yourself, come on, relax, relax, relax. And even when I said those words, I could see my shoulders drop and just, you know, the muscles which were holding my back rigid start to relax, to see myself slump. Because when I tell myself, relax, 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 that has an effect on my body. My body loosens up. In the same way, if you tell your mind, just calm, 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 I feel my mind relax and become more calm. It's another way which I just make peace with things. So making peace with things, it's not done with a rigid hand. It's a very, very soft hand which opens out and allows things to be. Sometimes you may not understand just the profundity of this whole idea of making peace with this moment. Making peace with this moment doesn't mean shouting it, be peaceful. It's a very gentle attitude of opening up the mind, of letting it be, of not fighting, of not controlling, but also a respect and kindness. It's just allowing things to be what they are, rather than trying to make them different, trying to control them. It's a non-judgmental, respectful attitude. It's the same attitude which I've been telling people in their interviews. Whatever you're watching a friend, not a slave. You are not the master or the mistress telling your mind or your body what to do. If you try and control your body and make it this way and that way, you end up hurting it. Sometimes when you want to try and make your body fit, you end up sort of walking around the monastery with a stick. This is one of the problems, isn't it? You're fighting the body rather than making peace with it, understanding it, being kind to it, being gentle with it. So it's such an important thing to look upon this body as your friend, not as something you master, not as something you control, not as something you train. If you want to train the body, then go and join a sports club. Go and join a gym. There you actually train the body, but you don't get enlightened, and the body gets sick and dies anyway. Instead, just learn about the body. Learn about the body and learn how to be kind and work with your body. Even work with your body when it's sick. just all parts of the body. That's the trouble sometimes with sickness, that people think that sickness is a failure, that sickness is wrong. And therefore you have to go to the doctor and make sure you never get sick. And of course there's something fundamentally wrong with that as far as I'm concerned. Sickness is part of nature, and we respect that nature, we allow it to happen. We're not afraid. It's a teaching, it's part of the Dhamma. And just the attitude which you have to your body, you will find that by allowing sickness to happen, you don't get sick. By being afraid of sickness, you do get sick. You know that, you sense that. So a lot of time, it's not knowing the right way of dealing with the body. It's the same way with your mind. When you're afraid of restlessness, you're afraid of fantasies, where you're afraid of whatever, then it happens more and more and more. So instead we have this beautiful aspect of making peace, allowing things to be, not being afraid, understanding that all these things which come up, they're all karma. And what can we do about it? Just trying to get rid of it, feeling embarrassed about it, feeling afraid, trying to control it, thinking that your mind is under your control, that you are its master or mistress, and you can tell your mind what to do. Stupid mind, whack, whack, whack. Mm-hmm. Now of course, what's that going to do? Number one, it doesn't get rid of the problem. Number two, and the most important, it gets more problems for the future. It's the future problems were the ones you can do something about right now. By changing the whole attitude to the meditation, and saying we have the same attitude towards your body, respecting this body and being kind to it, just allowing it to do its job. Your other senses, your feelings, perceptions, your will, the mind, the consciousness, just respect your consciousness rather than try and train or control it. By what you really are training is your reactions, not the things you experience, but your reactions to them. When you train those reactions and start to make peace instead of war, we have this beautiful sense of kindness rather than judging. Because when you judge, when you're not kind, you reject what you think is somehow wrong or bad or evil. And you just end up like all these other politicians, destroying what you consider to be pests. Just like there are pest management who go around spraying the termites, you know, killing and poisoning all the rats and stuff like that. As Buddhists, you know, we don't do that. You know, we're kind to the animals, even the animals who are sometimes pests. But we're not so kind to the pests in our mind. Some of you are just exterminators of defilements. You know, sort of laying traps in the mind, putting poison down, so any lust or any ill will which comes up just gets zapped. You know, like these fly zappers they have in the hardware store. In the summertime over here, there's so many flies. You can have these little electronic zappers, you know, with a blue light which attracts the flies, and as soon as a fly comes close, it gets zapped and electrocuted, which is really mean and nasty. But that's sometimes what people do with their mind. They put these electronic defilement zappers in their mind. Any sort of defilement comes up, zap. And you find that may be fun for a little while, but what you're really doing there, you're just making more defilements for the future. Because what you're actually doing there is you're missing the point of where defilements end. These defilements, greed, hatred, delusion, whatever it is, come up in your mind, ill will, tiredness, you know, being grumpy, whatever it is. This is caused by the past. Now it's here. What your job is to make sure how you're reacting to them. Number one, respect them. Have a perception of the beautiful. Gratitude. Thank you, stupid mind, for being here. And then you're not regarding these things as an enemy. You're not regarding these things as something you have to fight, deal with, get rid of. Instead, you're respecting these things, you're treating them as a friend. I don't agree with all my friends. That's why they're my friends. If I agreed with them all the time, just what use would they be? Friends are there to show you a different part of life. Just like all these defilements, they're your friends. They're showing you a different thing about life. You respect them. And when you respect your friends, you find the friend's attitude change. I always say that if you look at someone, you know, what you see in them is what they give back to you. You know, if you see them as an enemy, they act like an enemy. If you see them as a friend, they actually behave like a friend. What you see in somebody else is what they give you back. That's why when you're teaching in prisons, when you see a prisoner in front of you, that's how they behave. They behave like a criminal in front of you. But if you see them just a person, a really nice guy, that's what they become in front of you. They become a nice guy. So what you see in somebody else is what they show you back. So what do you see in your mind? If you see your mind as someone which needs to be trained, like this criminal who's always up to no good, always, you know, sort of supposed to be meditating, starts to think the weirdest sexual fantasies. If that's how you think your mind is, it's going to show you more sexual fantasies, more problems, more negativity, more ill will. So what you look for is what that thing shows you. So you change that to the perception of the beautiful. This mind of mine. I've known this mind for almost 60 years now in this life. It's been done some really stupid things sometimes, sometimes amazing things. Somebody surprised me, just some of the things which I've been sitting here and come out of my mouth. I said, gee, mind, where did you get that one from? That's really cool. Sometimes it said the most stupid things. But I respect my mind. We're good friends. You know, because we're good friends and I respect my mind and I stop trying to train it in that way when I'm trying to fight it and control it and make it better. Because we're good friends, that's why the restlessness doesn't come up so much. Because we're good friends, as soon as, you know, I start meditating, there's my mind say, ah, it's Brahma again, how are you going? You know, you're too busy just, you know, on the phone or talking to somebody. You're back again. How you been? So we hang out together. You can understand that bit of anthropomorphism, looking upon your mind like a person and treating them properly, respecting them. And what you see in your mind is what your mind will show you back. It's a very beautiful, skillful means. So if I'm meditating, I expect my mind to be stupid again. If I expect my mind is, it's going to just, here we go again, just another hour, it's going to be restless. If they think like that, of course that's what your mind shows you. So if you treat your mind like a friend, respect it, and look for the nice part of your mind, the perception of the beautiful, that's what your mind shows you back. You're being kind. You're making peace and being kind, being gentle with what you're experiencing. You're being kind, being gentle with your mind. You're looking for the beautiful part of it. You're making good meditation come. And my goodness, that works. It works beautifully well. Sometimes you get instant results, as some of you have told me in your interviews, the ones I've interviewed so far. You know, you're sort of changing, meditating there, just nothing's working, it's all going sort of, how long do I have to endure this? You change your attitude. And just that slight change of attitude, you get peaceful, you get bliss. And I've done that so many times. I realize it's the attitude problem. It's not your wisdom, you know, how much knowledge you've got. It's not your experience, how long you've been meditating for. And it's certainly not how strong your will is and how much you can strive. That is not the problem. It's not a matter of how healthy you are and whether you've got a sick this, a sore body, or what you're doing. It's all about what you're doing with what you have. The meditation karma you are making right now in this moment with your own mind. And of course, friendship, kalyana mitta, you know, the good friend. So, you know, Buddha said that good friendship is not half of the holy life, it's the whole of the holy life. So what does it mean, good friends with, you know, all your mates, invite them out for a cup of coffee, is that good friendship? No, good friendship with your mind. Being a good friend with your cough and your bronchitis. Being a good friend with whatever you with the cold. Being a good friend with these things means you respect every moment and you allow it to be. You make peace, you be kind and be gentle, and you'll find everything just relaxes. Just as I said, calm, 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 and my mind just goes to a deeper state of relaxation by making friends with my mind, making friends with my body, treating it well. It means that that karma I'm making with my body, the karma I'm making with my mind, is going to produce results. And because I've been doing this a long time, those results come. And you enjoy yourself. And so when I'm meditating, I think, wow, this is the result of the karma I've made in the past. You're having peace, blissing out, having a great time. Why? It's because of all those moments of peace and kindness and gentleness which I've created. I've looked at my mind with respect. I've looked at my body with also respect and gratitude. I've seen the beautiful stuff in this. And so seeing the beautiful stuff in my mind, that's what my mind shows me back. And it stays with me. And we have a great time together. You know that sometimes you meet people and are always criticizing you, always finding fault with you. Oh gee, that sometimes it's still the wash up from that bhikkhuni ordination. It still comes every now and again, and just you see all this negative stuff, and it's not Buddhist, basically. It's not just not nice, it's just nothing to do with what we should be as monks. Instead we have the perception of the beautiful, the perception of the wonderful. And if that's what people actually look for, that's what they will see. And if you do that with your mind, then there's no schism in the mind. You not go somewhere else trying to escape from the mind, which is called restlessness. Or sometimes sloth and torpor is another way of escaping. Why is it people have sloth and torpor? Why is it that you're restless? What are you trying to escape from? You're only trying to escape from something which you don't like. Something which you haven't made a proper relationship yet with your own mind. You get that good relationship of mutual respect, and of course the mind wants to hang out with you. It wants to stay with you and doesn't want to go to sleep. I remember as a student staying up all night with my friends, you know, playing cards or just hanging out, talking, listening to music or whatever. Oh, you can stay up all night with your friends. I don't know if you were allowed during the range retreat to go and just into your, I hope you're not doing this, going to each other's huts, chatting about this, drinking cups of coffee. It's so easy, isn't it? Stay up till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. But when you're just meditating by yourself, how many of you stay up till 10, 11, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning? Why is that? Because, you know, you want to escape from the mind. You've had enough with it. You're bored with it. So just go fall asleep. It's all a sign that you're not at ease with your own mind and body. You haven't made enough of that good, positive calm, meditation karma yet. And so your mind, when it sees you, just like to hang out, and you can stay up late, just like you'd stay up late with your friends before you came to this monastery. You stay up late enjoying each other. And that's what we mean. By making peace, by being kind, by being gentle, by respecting, you're building a sense of joy. Enjoying each other's company. Not fault-finding, but respect. And with that joy, it's easy to stay together. And that's usually how my meditation works. You sit there with your body and you respect it. You see the beautiful part of it, not all the aches and pains. You develop that making peace, being kind, being gentle, respect to your own body. Relax, body. It's okay. You don't have to prove anything. If you want to cough, body, you can cough. If you want to sort of stretch out your legs, stretch them out. It's okay, body. I'm not training you. Just I'm being kind to you. During one of those retreats recently, I used to tell people, ask your body, body, what do you want to do? Ask the question. And when the body says, cough, then just, okay, all right with me. You don't need permission, body. Cough. If you want to put your feet out, put your foot out. It's okay. So when I'm kind to my body says, no, I don't want to put my foot out, thank you, but I really appreciate you asking. And that's what my body says. I really appreciate that you care for me. It's amazing. somebody actually cares for me. You've been pushing me around for the last 60 years, and now you're actually asking me what I want rather than telling me. And just that change of attitude just relaxes the body. So the body becomes really nice and loose. I'm still amazed that after all these years I can sit cross-legged really easily. It's not just practice, it's just because the way I've been sitting cross-legged is always like with looseness and relaxing. He's seen me around, just the way my robe keeps on falling off and my, you know, slopping around, you know, when I talk to people upstairs. You see that looseness there? Now, that's done on purpose. Well, sort of on purpose. But I'm not going to stop it because it's teaching you something. Just the same thing with your mind. Just be kind to it. Be gentle. And that way my body is healthy. That way your mind becomes healthy and peaceful and joyful. Simply because the attitude you have towards it is the right attitude. You're making peace and being kind and being gentle with this mind. You're making good karma. So you're making good karma, and because of that the mind stays with you. That's called stillness. It's called tranquility of the mind. The mind doesn't need to move anymore. It's happy to hang out with you. It doesn't want to go anywhere else. It wants to stay with you. It's peace. You're making peace, you get peace. You're kind, and things like to be with you. But that was Ajahn Chah's. He used to say, if ever you become a teacher, even more important than your wisdom and how much you know about the Dhamma is how kind you are. And he said, if you're going to be a teacher, please, please, please practice and create a lot of metta, and then you'll have lots and lots and lots of people with you. You know that's why many of you are here. Just the kindness and the gentleness and the sense of acceptance which you feel. Yeah, you know, sometimes you get rejected from other monasteries, but you know, you can always come here. It's not that I'm desperate. It's just that, you know, you're kind. But isn't that wonderful, just, you know, to feel that, you know, maybe you may not get to anybody else, but you can always be here. And that makes you feel relaxed. And actually makes you a better monk. But then you don't have to, you know, at last you feel there's a place you can stay and be at peace and feel respected. Now imagine what your mind feels like. You know, you haven't respected it, always try to train it and make it different. Always, you know, being strict with yourself. No wonder your mind just is not happy, it's not at peace. It's always throwing tantrums. I like the word tantrum because, you know, sometimes your mind throws a tantrum. Have you ever been sort of meditating all day and just the mind's, right, that's it. And you can't want to sit down, you can't walk, you can't sit down, you can't go to sleep, it's just really crazy. What's happened there? That's the mind throwing a tantrum. Why? It's because of the way you've treated it. So if you get to that stage, you know, you just don't know what to do, you're climbing up the wall, don't think that, you know, you've got to sort of teach the mind be stiffer and stronger and more strict. No, it's because you've mistreated your own mind. That's why it's doing such things. So if you look at your mind and be kind to it, see the perception of the beautiful, just, you know, tell your mind, like sometimes I've done, you can open your eyes and sometimes, just like I stroke my head, there, Ajahn Brahm, it's okay. You know, even though you're getting really old now and I really just want to spend the weekend in my cave and I can't do it because all these people have come from such a long way. Never mind, Ajahn Brahm. Just when you're kind like that, so, you know, the sense that you engage and the mind doesn't sort of mess around anymore. So when the mind doesn't mess around, it means you have this beautiful sense of happiness and peace. And it's so easy to get into deep meditation with that attitude. And your friends, kalyanamitta to everything. Your friend just to all these people and busyness. Your friend to the cold. Your friend to not getting your own way. Your friend to a mind which just falls asleep when you're supposed to be meditating. Your friend to everything. With that degree of friendship, you can see where the defilements. Where is the suffering? Where is the reason to be agitated? You sit there and you're at peace. And just stillness is there. Why stillness? Because nothing to do. This is beautiful. This moment. Just sitting here in front of two microphones. This is beautiful. You get piri sukha. Because you made peace and you're kind, you're gentle, you respected this moment. Because you enjoy being with your own mind. Piti sukha, happiness, joy. You know, just you get blissed out. Just get incredible happiness comes up. Being with your best friend, your own mind. You've had such a long time together. Yeah, you've had your ups and downs. But you know, you got to know each other pretty well. And you're best friends. And because of that, you're at peace with yourself. With that peace with your own mind, it just gets still. It all the reasons, you know, for disturbances and hindrances, they just vanish. You've got joy and happiness because you're happy to be here. Restlessness and agitation are gone. Because you've got joy, that's energy, no more sleepiness. Because you're having fun right where you are, there's no desire to get anything else. Sexual fantasies, food, you know, dreaming of the future and worrying about the past, you can't do that anymore. Because you're enjoying yourself. You're having happiness and peace right now. And once that happiness is generated, you're off. Just going deep within, because there's no more draw outside. The happiness is with your own mind. The happiness is internal. It's an opanayaka happiness. It goes in, it draws you in and in and in, leading always going inwards and inwards and inwards. And that's where you just go on this incredible journey of meditation, which I've described so many times. Once you get it started, and that's my job, to get it started for you, you get this peace, this joy, and then you're just having a mind that's just so easy to be with. You're having a body which just disappears because you're just happy with the mind. Sometimes, like people with their best friend, they don't notice the other people around them come and go. I remember just anecdotes. Last time I went to London, meeting a friend I hadn't seen for 40 years. And I was supposed to have my dana in this Sri Lankan restaurant. I feel, you know, as much as a monk can feel guilty, because they invited me to their restaurant to give me a meal. And look, I spent all the time, maybe 2 hours, speaking to my friend. I ignored them, as if those people, they weren't there. And it was, well, I don't sort of get off on Sri Lankan food. It was Sri Lankan food, but I didn't sort of taste it because I was talking to my friend. It didn't matter what I was eating. You know it's like sometimes when you're with a good friend, everything else disappears. That's a sort of simile I'm making. When you're with a beautiful mind, everything else vanishes. You know, the time, the cold, what's happening around you, your body, it all disappears because you're having great fun with your own mind. That's what I mean. You get into the delightful breath states, or the breath disappears, beautiful nimittas, having great time together, enjoying each other's company. And of course, it's not the nimittas come and they disappear again, get frustrated because how can I get my nimitta to stay still and just to be here for a long time and get bliss? It's obvious. Nimitta wants to come, that's fine, you want to come, you want to go, okay, see you later. So you respect everything. You have this beautiful attitude, not controlling, but being kind, just making peace, being content. If it comes, it comes. If it goes, it goes. I'm just happy no matter what happens. And that type of mind, nimitta has just come. Gee, this meditator knows. And this meditator respects me, says nimitta. And of course, that's when the nimitta hangs out with you. And you play together for long periods of time, and it is play, enjoying each other, getting more and more bliss. Where did that bliss come from? It's the result of your good karma, your good meditation karma. You haven't been negative, you haven't controlled, had the beautiful right attitudes, just making peace with everything, being a friend to everything, seeing the beauty in everything. If you see the beauty in everything, then the beauty sees you. This is just the way we work with perceptions, as it's said in the Potapada Sutta of Digha Nikaya. But the whole practice of meditation is the skill in the right perceptions. So if you have the perception of the negative, the fault finding, you're never going to get anywhere in your meditation. Develop the perception of the beauty, you know, the wholesome dharmas, kindness, gentleness, peace, inspiration, friendship, respect, gratitude, all those beautiful words. If you develop those perceptions, then you have gratitude towards your breath. Thank you so much, breath, for feeding me oxygen all these years. I can't thank you enough. And then the breath comes along and say, what? You like me? And of course the breath then hangs out with you. Well, whoever you smile to smiles back. You smile at your breath. The breath is a delightful breath. If you try and control the breath or worried about it, it will never be beautiful. It will never be delightful. When it's delightful, oh, you can hang out together with a great time. When it does disappear, wow, what a great time we've had. You've got the joy and the bliss, which is an imitator. And this is just keeps on going like this. You get into just the jhanas and have a beautiful, wonderful time. When you come out afterwards, now I know what meditation karma is. And I know this mind, this body, it doesn't belong to me. My job is to be kind to it. In the same way that, you know, none of you belong to me. You're not my disciples, you're my friends. So my job is to be kind to each one of you. To be grateful to have known you for all these years or just for a couple of minutes. And just that beautiful sense of kindness and gentleness and respect. That's one of the reasons why too many of you come here. Well, you can't do much about that. That's why you have beautiful meditations as well. So that attitude which you have is the most important part of the meditation. So today I haven't talked about the hindrances or defilements. I've talked about attitude. To develop the perception of the beautiful, of the beautiful qualities, the Kalyanamitta. It inspires, it works, and gee, you have a beautiful time. And you learn that this is the way to enlightenment, to peace, to freedom, to letting go. Not through fighting, but through peace. So that's the talk this evening.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho.